worry as a bit of sport. I told Sigrun and Ranveigir, Aelin replied. Dario laughed. I can figure out the rest, he said. Duke Haydn stepped in front of Aelin and offered his hand. The two men shook. Congratulations, lad, said the Duke. Not many men can defeat two armies on a single day. Vero is reputed to be a powerful wizard, but you ruined his surprise. I wouldn't say that, came a new voice from the spot where Rocky had landed. A tall, green-robed wizard with dark hair, who looked a lot like Nud and Dario, was speaking. He'd been the leader of the attack at the quarry the previous morning. A dozen experienced wizards, also in green robes, surrounded him. The interface of a gate, the size of the double doors of the Blue Spiral Tower back in Melyn Carrig, shimmered behind them. As if imitating Inthira, Vero created a green-tinted hand of solidified sound that he used to grab Dario, lift him over his guards, and firmly hold the young king in place beside him. A thick tendril of force extruded itself from the green hand's wrist, encircled Dario's neck, and tightened until the young king could barely breathe.
Vero, said Merry softly.
It was quiet enough that everyone heard her. Aelin reached for his setting and raised his mage stone. He launched seven streamers of red fire high into the air. Chapter 72 Dothan and Salda. Dothan was surprised it hadn't been Einan's ring vibrating. Instead, it was the counterpart of the ring he'd given Salda, Merry's brother. His old friend Derry was Salda's father, and Dothan had advised and assisted the young man as he spied on the court in Rias. I hope it's not something serious, thought Dothan. Salda's true profession couldn't have been discovered. They'd never let him keep his rings if it had. Dothan knew Salda carried rings linked to Daemon and Astri as well, and was pleased the latter chosen to contact him. Hello, young man, said Dothan, as the image on the other side of the expanded ring's connection grew clearer. How are things in Rias?
I'm not in Rias, Uncle Dothan, said Salda. I'm in Darren, south of Brendinas along the Brenavon. Were those stampeding wizards you're doing, or Daemon's?
I'm there too, said Dothan, just south of the Darren army's encampment. Unfortunately, the wizards weren't my idea.
Daemon, then, said Salda. What a brilliant idea! I'd compliment the old man if his head wasn't big enough already.
It wasn't Daemon either, said Dothan. It was Merry's new friend, Aelin.
Wonderful, said Salda. I'll be glad to give him a compliment. Her friend's plan with the wizards was more successful than you might realize.
What do you mean? Asked Dothan.
Thibaut, Tanis and I are standing at the base of a wooden tower, said Salda. There's a royal observation platform at the top. We gave cider laced with sleeping drugs to the guards at the base. King Tuathel, Princess Gwynedd and Duke Nealon are above, with only a pair of wizards to protect them. A small force should be able to capture them.
Then Sharmat, said Dothan.
Checkmate. Exactly, said Salda. Hurry.
On my way, said Dothan.
He closed the connection and found the ring that paired with one he'd given Inthira. She'd be closest and would have the most resources. He tried three times, but she didn't answer. Dothan changed his course from north to northwest. He knew where he could find eight wizards who weren't busy with other assignments. The eight mages protecting both sides of the gate to Melyn Carrig had been happy to hear the rampaging wizards had totally disrupted Tamlach's army. They hadn't been given additional instruction after the last beasts had crossed over and had been taking turns passing through the gate themselves to admire the mountains of Melyn Carrig as the first rays of dawn caught their snow-capped peaks. They were all pleased to accompany Dothan to the temporary Tamlach observation tower once Dothan had told them who was on top. They circled in quietly from the north, since Dothan assumed Tuathel and the rest would be looking south at their enemy or east at their lost army on the ice. He warned them to take particular care with Princess Gwynedd, since Salda's previous reports had confirmed her loyalty was to herself, not Darren. Salda, Thibaut and Tanis met Dothan and the eight blue-robed wizards at the base of the tower. Sleeping guards in green livery were propped up against log uprights. Some were snoring. Salda explained his plan in whispers. Dothan and the eight wizards nodded. They all moved out of sight below the observation tower. A few moments later, Salda started up the stairs to the platform at the top. He carried an opened bottle of wine, but didn't need to bring goblets. Terry had delivered them earlier at Duke Nealon's command. On an earlier trip, He'd seen the goblets and the unopened bottle of red from the Isle of Vines meant to mark Tamlock's victory remained untouched on an empty wooden crate serving as a table at the back of the platform. Several other crates had been carried to the top of the platform to provide makeshift chairs as well. Ersa was the only person on the platform to note Salda's arrival. King Tuathel was next to Duke Neelan, looking out to the southeast at the last of the Wizened Herd. Their panic had ended, and several hundred of the massive beasts were calmly eating grass on the would-be battlefield. The king was anything but calm, however. He was yelling insults at Duke Neelan with occasional digressions to note the shortcomings of Tamlock's master mage and his lack of foresight. Duke Neelan stood stoically, letting King Tuathel's insults bounce off him like pellets of hail. Ersa didn't like hearing the king berate Vero, especially when his brother wasn't present to defend himself. She wondered if the Duke had thoughts of throwing King Tuathel over the edge of the platform. Ersa knew she shouldn't have similar thoughts, but she did. Terry stood a few steps behind the king and Duke, trying, like Ersa, to be invisible. Princess Gwynnet stood apart from the others. She looked south toward Darren's army and fingered one of the oversized rings on her left hand. "She must be thinking about her son," thought Ersa. "I wonder if he's more like my Salda or Tuathel." Had Ersa truly been privy to Gwynnet's thoughts, she would have known the princess was thinking more about Tuathel than Dario. Gwynnet had come to a decision. She didn't need to be a queen. Being the mother of the king of two kingdoms would be enough. "Hello, my love," said Salda quietly. Ersa leaned against Salda's side for a moment, enjoying his solid presence. Her feelings for Salda were one of the things that centered her and helped her cope with Tuathel's peremptory commands and tirades. "It's been awful here," whispered Ersa. "The king blames everyone but himself for his losses." Salda put his mouth close to Ursa's ear. "I'm glad Tuathel isn't my king," he said. "What do you mean?" asked Ersa. "I'll explain it later," said Salda. "Have a sip of wine straight from the bottle before I serve the others." Ursa looked at Salda, wide-eyed, like he was asking her to commit a crime, against proper manners at least. "Let it be a small act of rebellion, my love," said Salda. Ursa took the bottle Salda offered. He'd removed the cork. She didn't check the bottle for potions or poisons. Her beloved had shared it with her. She drank. Salda supported Ursa with one arm as she slumped. He took the bottle from her hands with the other and eased Ursa onto one of the empty crates with her back against the rear railing of the platform. Her features were relaxed. It looked like she'd simply fallen asleep. Salda hoped she'd forgive him when she woke. He kissed her forehead, squared his shoulders, and crossed to the opposite side of the back of the platform to collect the goblets. They were still on the silver tray Tanis had given Terry earlier. Salda hid the original unopened bottle of red behind the crate and filled three goblets with the wine he'd given Ersa. He cleared his throat. "Your Majesty, Your Highness, Your Excellency, I've brought you wine," said Salda in a loud voice that carried to the others below. "Wine would be good," said Princess Gwynnet. She turned towards Salda, and he brought the tray of goblets full of wine toward her.
"I'm your king. Serve me first," said Tuathel,
summoning Salda to him with a wave of his hand.
"I'm thirsty." "Let the princess have her wine," said Duke Neelan. "You can tell me more about my failings as a military commander while you wait."
"How would you like to lose your lands and title?"
said the king, as he turned away from Salda and Gwynnet to reply to the duke.
"I'll take this goblet," said the princess. "It's best to save the one with the most wine for the king."
Gwynnet took the goblet closest to her, then abruptly looked over Salda's head. "Is that a wizard or a buzzard?" she asked softly.
"Where?"
asked Salda. He turned and looked up, but saw nothing.
"Never mind," said the princess.
"It's gone now, and good riddance."
"Yes, Your Highness," said Salda.
He carried the tray with the remaining two goblets to the king and duke.
"Noble gentles, your wine," he said.
Tuathel snatched up the goblet with half an inch more wine, leaving the last one for Duke Neelan.
"To better days than this one," said the duke.
He raised his goblet and drank it down. The king grimaced and took several swallows. Salda was able to take Tuathel's partially full goblet from his limp fingers, so none of its contents spilled. He put the rescued goblet on the floor of the observation platform, next to the sleeping bodies of Duke Nealon and the king, and whistled three times. A pool of red wine was slowly working its way over the edge of the platform from the goblet Princess Gwynnett had dropped when she fell. Dothan and eight blue wizards on flying discs rose up to the level of the platform. Thibaut had one foot on each of two discs to better manage his size and bulk. Tanis waved at Salda and smiled from her position behind one of the eight blue-clad wizards. Terry stared at the new arrivals for a few seconds, looking like a field mouse surrounded by cats. Then he took his flying disc off his back and jumped over the rail. Chapter 73 And the Emperor of the Roma.
"Let him go," said Duke Haydn. "Don't you see that you've lost?"
"I haven't lost," said Vero. "Your king is in check."
Dario brought his hands up to tug at the green tendril around his neck, but it didn't loosen. Nud moved forward to get a better look at Vero. Einan realized why Nud was interested in Tamlok's master mage. The two of them were very much alike. They could be older and younger additions of the same man. Both were tall and muscular, with dark hair and eyes. Vero's voice was mellow, while Nud's was raspy, but that could be due to something as simple as Nud growing up in the thinner air of Melyn Carrig. Or a cold, Einan realized. Vero saw Nud near Duke Haydn, and the tendril's tension reduced. Dario's neck was still trapped, but at least he could draw a full breath.
"Excuse me, sir," said Einan. "Several other powerful mages are on their way here. You won't want to fight them."
"I don't need to fight them," said Vero. "And I'm not here to harm Dario. I'm here to ensure he doesn't leave until my brother can arrive to surrender."
"You're holding the King of Darren to make sure he's here so the King of Tamlok can surrender to him," said Merry. "That doesn't make any sense. Why would Dario go anywhere if Tuathel is coming to admit his defeat?"
"Because I'll be taking Dario to Tamlok immediately afterward," said Vero. "Tuathel will be naming Dario his heir."
A small gate opened between Vero's party and the royal guards. Daemon stepped out, with Quintilius ducking his head to fit through behind him. A contubernium of eight legionaries, along with two purple-robed wizards, crossed the gate's interface to join them. Vero and his wizards stood their ground. The newcomer's gate stabilized, and Daemon and his Roma companions circled to stand near Inthira, Merry, Einan, Nud, and Duke Haydn. Einan was surprised by Quintilius. He was the tallest man Einan had ever seen, and had dark, black skin. Previously, Einan had only come across black-skinned people in illustrations from Robin Goodfellow's Peregrinations. The world was full of marvels. Both the wizards with Daemon had the same sort of skin. One was a short, well-padded older woman, with hair like a black sheep's fleece. The other was a tall, skinny young man not much older than Einan. The purple of their robes made a striking contrast with their faces. Einan wondered if any people across the ocean had striped or splotched skins. He hadn't read of any like that, but there were still so many more books to read. Daemon stepped forward to confront Vero.
"Going after young men instead of young women now?" he asked.
Einan thought the master mages looked like two hungry hounds ready to fight for a bone. He'd never seen as much hatred in Daemon's eyes before. These two had history together. What had Vero done to anger Daemon? Einan wondered. It couldn't just be holding Dario.
"No," said Vero. "As I'd said before you arrived, when Tuathel joins us, he will name Dario as his heir and unite Darren and Tamlok."
A gust of wind blew dust around the field where they were standing. 12 small gold dragons landed two by two. Each pair held nets supporting passengers. King Bajani, Queen Signy, Astri, and three women in gold-coloured robes, who were clearly wizards, pushed their way out of the netting and got to their feet. The Bifalanders joined Quintilius and his legionnaires, with Bajani clasping hands with the tall Governor-General. Astri moved to stand by Daemon's side and put her hand on his arm. Daemon smiled. Sigrun, Ranvegir, and the other blonde and mostly braided dragon riders swarmed toward Nud and Einan, chattering in rapid, high-pitched voices.
"Why is the Tamlok wizard holding the strawberry merchant?" asked Ranvegir.
"It's complicated," said Nud.
He stepped away from the girls and stood on Daemon's other side, opposite Astri. Nud spoke to Vero.
"I know who you are," he said.
Wait, said Merry, looking south. Someone else is coming.
It was Furcher. She brought her flying disc in for a hard, fast landing beside Nud, kicking up still more dust to join what the gold dragon's wings had raised.
This wasn't how I wanted the two of you to meet, she said, taking Nud's hand and locking eyes with Vero.
The tall wizard in green looked at Nud while everything went silent around him. The dragon riders stopped their conversations to stare. A huge smile filled Vero's face as he realized who Nud must be. Then the smile was replaced by storm clouds ready to shoot metaphorical, if not actual, lightning bolts at Furcher. Vero released his grip on Dario and took four quick strides forward to put his hands on Furcher's shoulders.
You never told me, he said. Why didn't you tell me? I didn't want my son to be caught up in Tuathel's machinations, said Furcher. Even before he was king, he was plotting, turning you into someone more like him and less like the man I married. I didn't want the same thing to happen to Darianud.
Darianud? Asked Nud.
Furcher didn't answer.
Now what? Said Merry, pointing to the north at nine wizards on flying discs approaching the field.
Who else will show up? Asked Duke Hyden. Will the Emperor of the Roma with 1,000 ships from across the ocean sail up the Brenavon?
If he does, we'll stop him, said King Bajani.
Quintilius caught Bajani's eye and nodded his approval. The young dragon riders laughed, sounding like small golden bells. Einan saw some of the legionnaires smile as well. He crafted a set of far-seeing lenses from solidified sound and looked north.
It's Dothan, he said, and the wizards from the Wizard's Gate. They've got passengers.
Dario rubbed his throat for a moment, then walked around Furcher and Vero to join Duke Hyden, Einan and Merry. The wizards who'd gated in with Vero didn't try to stop Dario. When the young king saw the looks on their faces after he turned around, it was clear they were shocked and puzzled by Vero's words and actions. The seven women and five men in green robes crossed their arms and waited for instructions from their leader. The nine blue-robed wizards landed in the only remaining open spot near where Vero and his companions had appeared. Dario saw his mother, Princess Gwynnet, sitting on the back of one of the flying discs. He left Jennet's side and rushed to help Gwynnet. Jennet was glad to stay as far away from Dario's mother as possible. Gwynnet seemed sleepy, but was waking up and able to stand with help from Dario.
Thank you, son, she said,
smoothing back her hair from the wind of her flight.
You'll be twice the king your father ever was.
Dario escorted his mother to the others. Salda jumped off Dothan's flying disc and ran to the disc where a wizard, a pretty young woman with dark hair, was beginning to wake. Merry considered joining him to help, but Salda's focus was on the woman he was holding in his arms. A short man, with scarred and tattooed forearms, was sleeping on another of the blue-robed wizard's flying discs. Merry watched Thibaut toss the man over his shoulder like a rag doll and put him down gently on a patch of thick grass. Tanis, wearing a white apron, closely followed Thibaut's actions. She glanced over at the others and realized the tall man who looked like Vero must be King Tuathal. If the resemblance alone wasn't enough, he was wearing an impressive green robe trimmed in gold and covered with hundreds of royal Tamlach quatrefoils outlined with gold thread. Tuathal was standing, but still a bit unsteady on his feet. Despite that, he looked ready to shout at any and everyone within earshot. Then he saw Dario. Tuathal rushed to stand before Dario. He fell to his knees, then pulled Dario's arms down and away from Princess Gwynnet. Bowing his head, he placed his hands between Dario's.
"I pledge you my fealty," said Tuathal. "You shall be my heir and rule my kingdom after me. Thus shall we end the enmity between our realms."
"He talks a good game," said Einan.
"Shush," said Merry. "Listen."
Dario looked down and spoke sternly.
"You've lost, Tuathal. You're defeated. Your forces are routed. You will no longer rule in Tamlach."
Princess Gwynnet smiled at her son. She didn't know how easy it would be to get him back under her thumb, but she was quite glad to see him give Tuathal a taste of his own medicine.
"By all rights, I should have you executed," said King Dario.
From the corner of his eye, he saw a sly smile cross his mother's lips. Vero faced away from Fircher when he heard Dario's words. He and Fircher had been talking quietly while the chaos of all the new arrivals had gone on around them. Now he stared at the young king, his eyes flashing a warning. Take care what you say next.
But I will show mercy, Dario continued. I'll send you into exile in a tower somewhere inaccessible, like a pile of rocks off the Isle of Vines. You can plot all you want with the spiders and lizards.
Vero nodded. Fircher moved up to stand beside him. Without Tuathal's influence, she'd help him make himself back into the better man he'd been when she first met him. Tuathal stood and glared at Dario. He took a step back and regarded everyone around him with distaste, then brought his gaze back to Dario.
We could have done so much together, said Tuathal. I would have taught you how to be a king who inspires fear and obedience, one truly worthy to rule.
Dario looked away, then turned back.
Don't make me reconsider my decision, he said.
You would exile your own father? Asked Tuathal.
You're not my father. Prince Dari was my father. Tell him, mother, said Dario.
Princess Gwynedd hesitated before speaking.
He's right, she said. Tuathal is your father.
That can't be true, said Dario.
Unfortunately it is, sire, said Dothan. Baron Derry and I saw Tuathal enter your mother's chambers, the requisite number of months prior to your birth. I performed a consanguinity test using one of Tuathal's hairs and confirmed you were his son on the day you were born.
It's true, said Vero. My brother bragged about it, saying he'd put a cuckoo's egg in Darren's royal nest.
So, I'm not the rightful king of Darren? Asked Dario.
With my brother banished to exile, you're the rightful king of Tamloch, said Vero. You're also my nephew. I'm glad to help you any way I can.
Let me take that under advisement, said Dario.
Spoken like a true king, whispered Einan.
Shush, said Merry.
She was watching her brother and the young dark-haired wizard. The two were arguing, but they were talking too softly for her to hear. Merry considered using her listening spell, but decided that wouldn't be the best way for her to be a good sister to her brother, who'd so recently come back from the dead. Duke Haydn stepped close to Dario and put his hand on the young man's shoulder.
"You'll make a good king, lad, whatever crown you wear," said the Duke. "But if you're not the rightful king of Darren, who is?"
"I can answer that," said Astri.
Daemon tugged at her dark blue robes as she came forward, but he only managed to slow her down, not stop her.
"Please do," said the Duke.
Astri lowered her hood.
"Do you recognize me, Your Grace?"
Duke Haydn looked at her closely.
"We've met many times, but I've never seen your face, good wizard. You do look familiar, but I can't say from where."
"How many times have you walked through the palace gardens?" asked Astri.
"Dozens of times. Hundreds," said the Duke.
His eyes unfocused for a moment as he thought about his path through the gardens and what he'd seen there. Thousands of images spun through his brain.
"Subtract more than 40 years, said Astri.
The Duke looked back at her, then turned his head toward Fircher.
"You look like her," he said. "Like Fircher."
"Why shouldn't I look like my mother?" asked Fircher.
"I think I figured it out," said Einan softly.
"What took you so long?" asked Merry.
Einan watched Nud, not the Duke and Astri. His friend was slowly easing away from the crowd, scanning the skies. Einan took Merry's hand and guided them both closer to Nud.
"Astri is your mother," said Duke Haydn.
He looked from Astri to Fircher to Daemon.
"And Yeldman is your father?" "Guilty as charged," said Daemon.
"Wait," said the Duke to Astri.
"Now I remember who you remind me of. You look like the statue of Princess Seren near the roses."
Even the Biffalanders and Roma had heard about Princess Seren. So had the wizards from Tamloch. Everyone was staring at Astri and talking, wondering if Duke Haydn's speculation was true.
"My mother is Queen Caris," said Astri.
Fircha is my daughter, and her son, my grandson, is the rightful king of Darren.
The crowd began to buzz with excited conversations. Astri, or Princess Seren, if she was to be believed, scanned the crowd for her grandson, but couldn't find him. Tuathal looked daggers at Vero. His brother's son would be king of Darren, while he couldn't be by his son's side, ruling Tamloch. It was intolerable. Then waves of intense pain hit him, like sharp rocks in his gut. He fell to the grass, moaning. Irsa rushed to her king, with Salda behind her. She put her hands on Tuathal's abdomen and sensed the glow of poison inside him. Irsa looked back at Salda. She was angry, but she needed him.
"Get me milk or cream, as much as you can find," she ordered. "And eggs, raw eggs. I need to make him vomit."
Salda nodded and ran toward the Darren encampment, looking for the closest mess tent. They might have clotted cheese if they didn't have milk, he thought. Dario turned to his mother as if expecting some sort of confession from her. Gwynnett slipped an "I have no idea what happened" mask on her face and gleefully contemplated two lovely little words beneath its surface. Slow acting. Unfortunately, wizardry was better at detecting poisons than dealing with their effects. Astri, Dothan and Vero offered to assist Irsa. Mafuta, who'd overheard the young Tamloch wizard's instructions to Salda, sent Felix through the gate to the Roma legions to see if he could find something to counteract the poison faster in their supplies. Tuathal's face was pale and his skin was clammy. He pulled his knees against his chest and panted against the waves of agony racking his body. It was clear he was dying. Chapter 74 The Reluctant King. Einan and Merry missed Tuathal's collapse. They were following Nud west, away from the center of the army. Nud had moved toward the middle of the field, still dodging the occasional wizened cow or flathorn. Once he was far enough from the gathered dignitaries near Dario, he started running and calling for Rocky. Einan and Merry had expected Nud to stay close to the Darren lines so he could avoid detection, but he'd outsmarted his friends by shifting direction. By the time they'd figured it out, Nud was on Rocky's back, flying west as fast as the wyvern's wings could take him. To their surprise, he flew over the gate the wizards had used. Merry spun her flying disc in front of Einan to stop him from zooming off in pursuit.
"Wait," she said. "We have to be smart about this. Flying discs aren't much faster than wyverns, if they are at all. Where do you think Nud's headed? It can't be Melancarig."
"It can," said Einan. "It's his home. He just needs to lose us first."
"I'll bet he won't be staying in Melancarig if he goes there," said Merry. "It's the first place he'd think we'd look."
"What do you think he's planning then?" asked Einan.
"I think he'll go to Melancarig for supplies, then head off to find a place to hide in the Western Mountains," said Merry. "I don't know enough to be sure. I've only been to Melancarig twice and didn't see much in daylight, but it looked like there'd be lots of places for a man and wyvern to hide out there and not be found."
"Daemon might have some ideas," said Einan. "My guess is Nud is flying to the Blue Spiral Tower on the Ruthro. He wants to take the gate from there to Melancarig, skipping all the miles in between."
"We can beat him to the Blue Spiral Tower by taking a gate from Brendinas," said Merry. "I'm sure Fircha has a gate that goes from the capital to her tower."
"I agree," said Einan. "But I have an idea about where he might stop before he goes all the way to Melancarig. He's sweet on my sister."
Chi finished the bag of dried cherries from Dario and climbed back on Einan's shoulder. The three of them watched Nud and Rocky dwindle into a dot on the horizon. The little raconette let out a mournful chee as he watched the wyvern disappear. Merry and Einan swung back to the gathering on the field and spoke with Fircha. They got directions to her townhouse and the phrase that opened the gate to the Blue Spiral Tower, then flew north and went through it. At the tower, Tuto, Fircha's owl familiar, reported a man on a wyvern had come through a supply gate from the Serendipity Supply Warehouse in Brendinas and arrived at the tower an hour or so earlier. Merry thanked Tuto, and the two young wizards left the tower flying toward Haywall in the Coombe. Applegarth was nearby to the south, and she missed her mother and father, but she still wasn't sure how she felt about them keeping the fact that Salda was alive from her. It might be a good idea to wait a while, perhaps a few months, before she came home. The smile on Einan's face got bigger the closer they got to his home village.
He got along well with his parents and little sister, mostly, and Mary envied him all the aunts, uncles and cousins, real and honorary, he had nearby. It was just past lunchtime when they landed in the slate-covered courtyard, shared by several cottages. They could tell that Nud and Rocky had been there recently. Neighbours were out in the courtyard, gossiping, and three of the middle-sized children from cottages near Einan's were shoving sticks into a huge pile of cooling wyvern dung. Chi jumped down from Einan's shoulder and found a stick of his own. He pried bits of dung from the pile and flung them about randomly. Some hit the children and the other onlookers. "Stop that!" said Einan. Chi returned to stand near Einan and Mary, but he didn't return to Einan's shoulder. "Just as well," thought Einan. "He probably smells like wyvern dung." Braith came out into the courtyard when she heard the additional commotion caused by Einan and Mary's appearance. Chi immediately tried to jump on her shoulder, but Braith sniffed and fended him off with her apron. The Raconette contented himself to sit on one of her boots. "If you're looking for Nud, you just missed him," said Braith. "He told me you would probably be following him. Nud said he just wants to be alone to think. What is he worried about?" "It's a long story," said Einan.
"You can tell me later, then," said Braith. "Who's your friend?"
"This is Mary," said Einan. "Mary, this is my little sister, Braith."
"Einan's told me a lot about you," said Mary. "You've got a lovely smile."
"Thank you,"
said Braith. "I've also got too many freckles."
"You're very pretty."
"Thank you," Mary replied. "So are you. I think you've got exactly the right number of freckles."
"She's nice," Braith informed her brother.
"Are you going to marry her?"
Einan smiled at Mary, and she smiled back.
"Probably," he said.
"Probably?"
asked Mary.
"Make that yes, if she'll have me," said Einan.
"Good," said Braith.
"Very good," said Mary.
She licked her upper lip suggestively, and Braith giggled. Einan's cheeks started to turn red, and he changed the subject.
"Where are Mum and Dad?"
he asked.
"Dad's at the milking barn, helping to dig out the cold storage pit," said Braith. "Some of the stones fell in, and they decided to enlarge it when they repaired it."
"I'm glad I'm not with him hauling rocks, then," said Einan.
"And Mum?"
"She's visiting in Brynhill, trading a wheel of cheese for flower bulbs for the garden," said Braith. "She said they'll be really lovely when they bloom."
"That should take the rest of the day," said Einan.
"Tell them I'm sorry I missed them."
"Which way did Nunt go when he left?" asked Mary.
"He asked me to tell you he was going to look for a gate in the Baron's castle and care cattle," said Braith. "But he's really going to the quarry."
"Why would he be back there?" asked Mary.
"The last time we went there, we were attacked."
"He said he felt like something was drawing him there," said Braith. "Nunt thought it would be a good place to think. The quarry workers are helping to build a new storehouse off the square in Whirl, so I told him the quarry should be quiet and deserted."
"Thanks for the details," said Einan.
"Did he try to kiss you?"
"No,"
said Braith. She smiled at Einan and Mary.
"But I kissed him."
"Don't grow up too fast, little sister," said Einan, as he gave Braith a hug.
"It was just on the cheek," said Braith.
"Good," said Einan. Mary winked at Braith behind Einan's back.
"Wait just a second," said Braith.
She smiled at her nosy neighbours and the small children with sticks, then stepped back into her family's cottage. Chi went for a ride on Braith's boot and returned with clean paw hands a couple of minutes later.
"I washed him off," said Einan's sister. "He pumped the sink and I made him use soap."
"Thank you," said Einan.
"This is for you," said Braith.
She was holding a napkin knotted around something bulky.
"I made lunch for Nud, but he didn't stay for me to give it to him. I think he was worried about all the attention Rocky was getting."
Braith handed the knotted napkin to Einan and accepted hugs from Einan, Chi and Mary. Chi moved back up to Einan's shoulder. The two young wizards and the Raconette waved goodbye to Braith and Einan's neighbours and flew northwest toward Werrell. It wasn't long before they were circling the quarry. Rocky was easy to see. His black bulk stood out against the quarry's green-tinted floor. It looked quite a bit different at midday. Nud was sitting on a boulder with his elbow on his knee and his chin in his palm. It was clear he was thinking. He waved and didn't seem too unhappy to see them. Einan and Mary landed a dozen yards away and didn't address Nud immediately. Their friend's mind seemed preoccupied. They assumed he was concerned about recent revelations. A An odd-looking green triangle of some strange material poked out from the floor of the quarry close to Einan's flying disc. It was big, nearly 4 inches thick and almost as tall as Einan's outstretched arm. He waved Merry and Nud over, but only Merry joined him.
"It looks like some kind of sail," said Merry.
"Leave it alone," said Nud from his boulder. "Something tells me it will be nothing but trouble."
"Don't tell Einan to leave it alone," said Merry. "Now I have to find out what it is."
"You won't change my mind," said Nud.
"Change your mind about what?" asked Einan.
"About being king," said Nud.
"You'd be a good king," said Einan.
"Not wanting to be king will probably make you a better king," said Merry. "At least from the stories I've read. I've only met two kings, and Tuathel is definitely a bad king. I'm not sure about Dario yet."
"I like him," said Nud.
"You look like him," said Einan.
He paced around the strange green triangle, and his red mage stone began to pulse rapidly.
"I ask you to leave that thing alone, whatever it is," said Nud. "I've got a bad feeling about it."
Merry teased Nud and distracted Einan simultaneously. "If you don't want to be king, we're fine with that, aren't we, my love?"
"What?"
said Einan. He was on his knees now, scraping pebbles away from the base of the triangle with his fingers. Nud stood and found one of the lengths of wood the quarry workers used as levers. He held it up in his right hand.
"If I were king," he said, "I'd make it a royal command."
"Yes, your majesty," said Einan.
He got to his feet and stared at the triangle.
"Do you like the sound of that title?" asked Merry. "Your majesty," she said, giving Nud a deep bow.
"Not really," said Nud.
He glanced at the knotted napkin on Einan's flying disc and dropped his wooden scepter.
"Is that my lunch?"
"It's our lunch," said Merry.
"I want to eat it back at your cottage," said Nud. "Let's go."
"You want another chance to kiss my sister," teased Einan.
"She kissed me," Nud protested.
Merry stepped on her flying disc, and Nud climbed aboard Rocky's back. She ran over to the green triangle, jumped up to stand on its edge, and wiggled its tip back and forth. Einan was surprised the triangle moved. He'd thought it was like a sheet of green slate used to cover the roofs of stone houses in Werrel. He stepped over the triangle to retrieve Chi, and leaned against what Merry had called a sail to see if the whole thing was flexible, not just the tip. It was. The triangle bent over under Einan's weight, then sprang back, tossing him and Chi onto the scree on the quarry floor. Getting back up slowly, Einan collected Chi and got on his flying disc. The two wizards and the wyvern rose above the quarry and looked down to see the green triangle continue to move and free itself from the stone around it. The sail was revealed to be the end of a tail as big around as a wizened. They saw the ground shake and rocks fall from the quarry wall as the spiked and scaled back of a great green monster as large as Furcher's Tower began to free itself from its prison of stone.
You have been listening to The Congruent Wizard, Book 2 of The Congruent Mage, produced by Greg Lawrence, Associate Producer Emily Durr. Text copyright 2017 by Dave Schrader. Production copyright 2018 by Podium Publishing. All rights reserved. If you enjoyed this audiobook, let us know. Take a quick moment to rate and review it on Audible, so we know we're bringing you audiobooks you'll love.
More than a dozen flying discs bearing green-cloaked wizards poured over the 100-foot rim of the quarry. Most of the attacking wizards had one or two soldiers armed with swords and crossbows crowded around them on their yard-wide discs. Some soldiers carried buckets and shovels. The sun would be up soon, but for now, the only illumination came from a glowing sphere of light cast by Dothan. Furcher shouted, "Vero!" and launched herself at the tall, dark-haired wizard leading the attack. He was standing alone on his disc and seemed to be directing the other green wizards. Buckets and shovels, thought Einan. Of course, he realized, to collect green mage stones. Merry, Elderman and Dothan angled their flying discs to engage the rest of the attacking wizards directly. But Einan remembered the strategy the Griffin had used on the old Ball Wizened, and sent his flying disc above all the other combatants, so he could evaluate the scene and attack from an unexpected direction. Below, he saw Furcher and a wizard in green robes, who must be Vero, exchanging lightning bolts that crackled, boomed, and echoed off the quarry's walls. Rocky, the Black Wyvern, who had somehow adopted him, was darting in and out of clusters of Tamlock wizards, using his body to disrupt their flight. Einan's staff was still tucked into the scarf tied on the big beast's back. Rocky flicked his tail right and left, knocking four attackers off their flying discs when they were close to the ground. Einan saw them fall 10 or 12 feet to the hard floor of the quarry. Only two of them got up. Chi wasn't fond of the conflict, and retreated from Einan's shoulder to hide inside his jacket, making nervous chee-chee-chee-chee sounds while the battle raged below. Merry and Dothan were following five Tamlock wizards as they dove to the quarry's floor, dropped off their soldiers, and swooped back up to a higher vantage point. The older wizard sent a congruency ahead of two of the five and used it to release torrents of water onto the retreating Tamlock wizard's spherical shields. With a gesture, he sent a gust of chilled air at the water that was so cold, the liquid froze around the shields, blinding the wizards and weighing them down. The pair of attackers descended rapidly and broke their ice shells when they made hard landings. Einan was impressed by Merry's skill using thin beams of tight light. He hadn't learned that sort of magic, though Daemon had used it against him. Apparently, the beams could carry force, not just light and heat. Merry used dozens of beams the width of her little finger to set the other three Tamlock wizards' spherical shields spinning, making the wizards who'd constructed them twist in dizzying circles. Far below, Nud was firing his crossbow. At first, he'd been aiming at wizards on flying discs, but now there were enough soldiers on the ground that he'd shifted his focus to them. Unfortunately, some of the soldiers were shooting back, so Nud had retreated to crouch behind a quarryman's wagon 10 yards behind his previous position. Drawing on the expertise of his borrowed blue mage stone and his red mage stone's power, Einan created a curved, translucent red wall of solidified sound between the wagon and the Tamlock crossbowmen. Nud immediately shifted from direct shots to arcing fire, sending his bolts over the wall and down into clumps of soldiers. The blue mage stone somehow maintained his construct without continued attention from Einan. He turned to look for Daemon, expecting to find the old wizard using spectacular magic to stop more than half the attackers at once. Instead, he saw Daron's master mage casting a massive construct of solidified sound in the shape of a giant dome above the quarry, keeping out a third of the attacking wizards, including Vero, and preventing the ones below from escaping into the clouds. Speaking of clouds, Einan caught a glimpse of something purple inside a low cloud that was almost a fog bank. He didn't have time to investigate it, because the wizards above Daemon's shield had seen him, and were headed in his direction, ready to blast him with their own selected forms of wizardry. Einan deployed a defensive sphere of solidified sand around him, leaving a small hole in the back of the sphere to work offensive magic. He created a lens to accumulate magical energy, like the one he'd used against Daemon during his testing yesterday, and prepared to take whatever the green-garbed wizards decided to throw at him. He pretended to cower in fear of his attackers. It wasn't hard to do, but he hoped they'd be the ones truly worried in a few seconds. While his opponents were positioning themselves for attacks from all directions, Einan was subtly moving small bubbles of transparent solidified sound under the edges of the flying discs controlled by the six green-clad wizards arrayed around him. His hands were balled into tight fists, keeping the bubbles tiny. Then he flung his hands open in a fast, fluid motion, and all the bubbles rapidly expanded to 10 times their original size, catching the green wizards by surprise and tipping their flying discs almost to vertical. Two managed to hang on, but the other four fell like rocks toward the quarry floor. They didn't fall far, however. Daemon's shield was in the way. The attackers from Tamlock hit Daemon's construct and slowly slid along it, pulled down the shield's slope by their own weight. Einan watched them try to slow their descent with their boots and palms pressing against the curved surface. The two remaining attackers were trying to tilt their flying discs back to horizontal by shifting their weight, so he set them rotating with nudges from their enlarged bubbles. That should slow them down, thought Einan. He glanced below to check on Nud.
The big man was out of his own quarrels and was scavenging bolts the Tamlok soldiers had shot at him before Einan put up his protective shield. Einan saw Nud shoot one more missile from his crossbow, then start waving his arms and shouting. He was too far away to hear what Nud was saying, but Einan realized the soldiers with picks and shovels had filled most of their buckets with green stones. Green mage stones, Einan assumed, dug up from just beneath the quarry's floor. One of the wizards guarding the soldiers holding shovels and buckets launched a fireball over her head. It exploded below Damon's hemispherical shield in a shower of glowing green sparks. Einan watched Vero push Furcher away from him with a large expanding bubble of solidified sound. The tall green wizard dove toward the protective dome Damon had created. A tight cone of verdant energy shot from the mage stone on Vero's cuff and punctured Damon's sphere like so much soap film. Vero sped toward the floor of the quarry, like a hook-beaked Aloysius swooping down on a squirrel. The few remaining green-garbed wizards in the air followed close behind him.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.